Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, as the Synod of Bishops on New Evangelization draws to a close, we hear from a new Asian cardinal about the need for a humbler, more listening church. And a husband and wife team from France, who are running the Alpha course in their home country, are calling on Synod Fathers for a new, more lively style of pastoral leadership. Stay tuned. The Synod of Bishops on New Evangelization draws to a close this weekend as the church leaders issue a concluding message and final document, drawing together the results of their 3 weeks' work. 262 church leaders, plus 100 experts, both religious and lay men and women, and a handful of ecumenical guests have been discussing the keys to revitalizing the faith. They're focusing on deepening spiritual formation, as well as some practical pastoral responses for the church in different parts of the globe. Pope Benedict himself has been present at many of the Synod's sessions, but on Wednesday, following his weekly general audience, he made a surprise announcement of a forthcoming consistory for 6 new cardinals, including several who are taking part in the Synod of Bishops. Among them is the young Archbishop of Manila in the Philippines, Luis Antonio Tagle, who talked to me about his reactions on receiving the red hat and the message he's bringing to the Synod from the Church in Asia.
I would like to thank the Holy Father for his trust and confidence, not only in me, but in the church in Manila and the church in the Philippines. I take this not only as a gift, but also as a call for the church in the Philippines to take seriously our mission, especially in Asia. Nowadays, especially through our migrants, Filipino workers all over the world, the faith, the Christian faith, is made present, spreads all over the world. So maybe this is a time for us to thank the Lord and also to take seriously our mission.
You talked here at the Synod about the need for a much humbler, quieter church, a church that doesn't claim to have all the answers to people's problems. Can you explain a little bit the kind of message you're trying to bring here?
First of all, I was quite struck that many members of the Synod and even people of the press picked up that intervention, and even that of my colleague, Archbishop Villegas. I think we're coming from, first, the context of Asia. As a minority church, we're like John the Baptist crying out in the wilderness. You're not even sure whether people give you a fair hearing, you know. And even in the Philippines, even if the church in the Philippines is the majority, we realize, or I realize, that the sufferings of people and the difficult questions that they ask are really invitations for us to first be in solidarity with them, not to pretend that we have all the solutions and all the answers. And they love a church. They can resonate with the church. They see a concrete face of God in a church that can just sometimes be silent with them, be as confused as they are, also telling them, you know, we share the same situation of confusion and searching, etc. You know, it becomes a home for many, many people. And besides, I think it evangelizes the church. I'm always struck by moments, especially in the Gospels, where Jesus was silent and God was silent, and Jesus would even invite people not to talk. Of course, biblical scholars and theologians have their interpretations. I guess their interpretation is more correct. But many times, allowing those passages to intersect with my experience, I feel that it was also an invitation on the part of Jesus for people to realize that even the marvelous things that he does is not meant for like self-affirmation. It's not for propaganda. It is not for to earn or win praise. But it is for faith. And if people don't see, you know, the sign, the true meaning of the sign, and elicits faith in them, then just be quiet. Just be quiet.
Your vision seems to be at odds with some of the other voices that are coming out of this synod, voices that are calling for a louder, more affirmative, a bolder church that is willing to raise its voice in the public square without fear.
Well, I believe that the church should contribute in the debates in the public squares, but we in Asia are very particular about the mode. How do you participate? For us, some anthropologists say that the Asian cultures are quite dense. I don't know what that means, you know, that we are less conceptual, notional, but we operate on feeling and sensing, perception. And so you may be saying the right things, but people will not listen to you if the manner by which you communicate reminds them of a triumphalistic, a know-it-all type of institution.
People can even be put off by this.
Yes, definitely. And some parts of Asia, I know the relative silence or calmness of the church is interpreted in some quarters as timidity, you know, lack of courage. But I say no. It makes the church more credible in Asia. Now, I don't know in other parts of the world, maybe a loud voice commands attention. But in Asia, you know, just like this whole question of when the Holy Father, Pope John Paul II, was preparing for the great jubilee of the year 2000, asking pardon for the sins of the past, I know some people in the church were not too at ease with that. They were worried about credibility of the church if we start pointing to our own faults in the past. No. But I remember telling a group of theologians, they asked me, that, how will this sit with Asia? I said, well, in our culture, if someone accepts one's fault and asks pardon, the standing, the moral standing of that person just shoots up. And that person is listened to and accepted.
Interesting here, there's been a lot of focus on the sacrament of reconciliation, asking for God's forgiveness, and yet not perhaps a large focus on the church itself asking forgiveness, as you say, John Paul II did around the year 2000.
Yes, I think some groups, small groups, have also noticed that, and the revisions and the suggestions, you know, I think would contain some of them.
You're hopeful then that the final documents from this synod will reflect these diverse opinions, these diverse views, or is it perhaps not possible actually to come up with a one-size-fits-all given these extraordinary differences of cultures that you're talking about?
Yes, I think that's part of the limitation of producing one unified set of propositions. You know? In fact, even the words mean differently to different contexts and different peoples. The word catechist, for example, in Africa, the catechists are not just the teachers who go to schools once a week and explain. They really take care of some stations and mission areas. So, wow, I mean, in the Philippines, for example, we won't call that type of person a catechist. Maybe he would probably be called a pastoral assistant. Right? So we see this. The terms are there, but people who read the text mean different things about those words. You know? But I guess what is crucial, first for documentation, is for those who will do research later on to go to the minutes of the small group discussions. There they will see, you know, the great diversity that is put into a formulation. That one sentence may be the product of 15 different experiences from 20 different countries. You know?
What are you hoping finally to take back to Manila from this experience here of the synod? What do you hope it can bring to the people of the Philippines?
Well, to the people of the Philippines and also to the people of Asia, I will bring a lot of optimism and hope. I hear a number of times the fear of some churches that have been used to being the majority and, you know, very influential in society. They're afraid of the waning numbers and also influence. But as I listen to them, I say, but that has been the story of the church in Asia for the past 2,000 years. No? We don't panic. You live with it. And you know, you trust that the Lord is risen and that the Holy Spirit continues to blow, no? Continues to blow in spite of us sometimes. And well, many times because of us too, you know. But and so I will tell them, maybe a time will come when we can share our experience to other churches that are afraid, who are not used to this situation of being a minority. And we can share with them, you know, the joy, you know, that we have, even if and the heroic ways by which people transmit the faith and testify to their faith.
Thanks there to Archbishop Luis Antonio Tagle of Manila in the Philippines. Looking for a new style of leadership for new evangelization. That's the call from a couple of lay people serving as auditors at the Synod of Bishops, which ends with the concluding Mass on Sunday. Florence and Marc de Leyritz are a husband and wife team who founded the Alpha Course for French Catholics, a form of new evangelization first developed in an Anglican parish in central London back in the late 1970s. From that first training course in the basics of the Christian faith, the Alpha experience has spread to countries around the globe and has been adapted to all denominations, all age groups, and many different cultural contexts. In their address to the Synod of Bishops, Marc and Florence spoke of the need for new pastoral vision, new leadership skills, and better teamwork between all members of the body of Christ. I caught up with this dynamic duo during a break in the Synod to find out more about their requests and about their personal experience with the Alpha movement.
It's very simple. It's a way for ordinary parishioners like me to invite friends, other mothers from the school or somebody you had a meaningful conversation with in the bus, to a simple dinner in the parish, or it can be at my home but you're linked with the parish, where people can get friends with other people from the local church around a good dinner. We try and have excellent food. And then there's a talk that is about really what is essential about the message of Jesus Christ, done in a humoristic way. We show that Christians can, you know, be normal and fun people, and also very related to everyday life. And the most important part of that time together, it's usually an evening, but it can be breakfast or lunch, is conversation, where people can come, and even if they know nothing about faith, they are made to feel very comfortable with it. If they have objections or prejudices or aggressivity or anger against the church because of bad experience, we listen to them and we welcome what they have to say. And progressively, week after week, because Alpha is a 10-week introduction to the Christian faith, people free themselves from their prejudices, and a lot of them begin a personal relationship with the Lord.
So what kind of success have you had in this program, you say, over the past 15 years?
Well, Alpha has existed for 30 years now, and around 20 million people around the world, in India, in Asia, in Latin America, even in France, have experienced the church in a positive way. And a lot of people have asked to get baptized, or people who had been baptized but completely lost any relationship with the church have asked to be confirmed, or are coming back to their local church.
Marc, how did you get involved? Were you dragged into this by your wife? What's been your experience of Alpha?
We were both living in London. I was working in the city at the time. A friend of ours called us, invited us, a colleague of mine actually, and we reluctantly decided we would go and follow at least the first evening. And we fell into the pool, so to speak, together. We were both very committed Catholics when we followed Alpha. And this course was like, for us, a second conversion. You know, the first conversion happened for us when we were in our early 20s, when we discovered that being a Christian was about following Jesus, you know, wherever he goes, and with ups and downs, but following him and having a living relationship with him. What we found in Alpha, after years and years in the church, was that there was the flip side, so to speak, of this relationship was announcing the gospel. Not because it's something you need to do, but it's so compelling that once you've found this well of living water in this deserting world we live in, you can't do anything else than spreading it. And what we found in Alpha was not only this, which is, you know, a renewed understanding of what mission was about, but also a simple tool that was allowing anybody, really anybody, to become a living testimony to the strength and joy of the gospel today.
Talking about your family, you say you have five children. How do they react to this work that you do? Are they involved as well?
You can say they're involved. They come with us on many activities. We try to expose them to other many different aspects of church life because we don't want them to get saturated in what we do and because the church is so diverse. But each of them have a prayer life and they bring Jesus to their school place, which is not that easy in France today.
Very difficult, in fact, in France today, isn't it? Mm. Laïcité is all important.
Yes, it is. But at the same time, I think even people who don't go to church, who describe themselves as non-practicing and even non-believing, have a spiritual life. And in the heart of any man, there's a call for transcendence. And it's not that difficult. That's also something I love with Alpha. We listen a lot to people. And if you, before speaking, we need to listen. And when people bring you what hurts or what is wanting in their life, you can just share your own testimony in a humble way, and it's compelling.
The Alpha course can be adapted, can't it, to all kinds of different situations?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons we like it so much, is that being Catholics and French, in a way, it was quite a challenge for us to venture into an Anglican and British tool. As Nicky Gumbel is saying very often, is the founder of the Alpha course, two things were uniting us in Great Britain, the hate for France and the hate for the Catholic Church. So it's really an amazing tool of unity. And one of the reasons why so many denominations across the world are using it, which is the case, you know, there are roughly 70,000 parishes and Christian communities giving it, from all major denominations, is that it is both very efficient, very sharp in the way it's structured because it's based on experience, and at the same time, it's adaptable in its culture to any community. So here, for instance, in the Synod, it's quite striking to hear so many, in particular of the African fathers, insisting that acculturation is important. Or it reminds me of the discussions we had in the past in England with Jesuits or Benedictine parish priests, which, as you know, is more often in your country than in ours. And they were sharing with us, after a few years running Alpha in their parishes, that there was a Jesuit way, a Benedictine way, of running Alpha, as there is a Pentecostal or Catholic way of running Alpha. So that's one of the reason of the success. It's really adaptable to big cities like New York or to rural Zambia, or rural France. You know, that I find this is really respectful of the color and the atmosphere of every community, which is really admirable.
You're both here taking part in the Synod of Bishops. What are you bringing? What is your task here?
What we bring is really a humble testimony that lay people, couples, families are part of new evangelization in an organic way in the church. If many fathers of the Synod say evangelization is not going to happen if lay people don't do it. So that's the testimony we bring to the Synod.
Would you like to see a greater participation of lay people? There are a number of you, about 100 between the lay people and religious, aren't there? But would you like to see a stronger voice from the laity like yourself?
Personally, I feel that having a small group of people is good. This is primarily a bishop's synod, and we can see, you can feel it from where you stand, that it takes time to reach a common vision. And the bigger the group, obviously, and the more diverse the constituency, the more difficult. You know, the past synod on evangelization, which was back in 1974, right before Evangelii Nuncii was issued, was really difficult because this is a very complex concept and set of actions from a pastoral standpoint. So I would say, depending on the themes, you know, for instance, of the family, you might have cases where it might make more sense to have more lay people. But on pastoral issues like this, where it's already quite complicated to converge, I would probably try and keep the group smaller and more homogeneous.
You are the only married couple here, aren't you, giving your experience of family life, is that correct?
We've been told that it's fairly uncommon for that to happen, yes.
And yet there is a huge insistence on the family, isn't there, as the first place of evangelisation?
Yes, many say the family is both an object of evangelisation, because as families we need to be evangelised, and a first subject of evangelisation. Because parents have such a huge role to play to make it possible for their children to experience faith and to live faith. And also because families are the ones who can reach out to their environment in their villages, in their cities, in their workplaces, in the school places. So many bishops have talked about how important it is for them to support couples, to support families, to support also the schooling, the education system and the schooling system, but also to engage families in giving a Christian witness.
What are you hoping to do in terms of very practical input into the final propositions, the message, the outcome of this synod, if you like?
You know, the synod explicitly, as it's laid out in the Instrumentum Laboris, is not about disseminating practical methodology. It's about more stepping back and trying to look at what, you know, the risen Lord is already doing in his church and thinking about what to do next. So obviously we will not be promoting Alpha per se, which would be meaningless. Something which really is on heart, I would say, are two things. One is we feel that leadership issues should be dealt with far more seriously at the bishop and priest, and well, in the church in general, what we call in Latin, you know, munus regendi. And that was the core of our intervention yesterday. And we really are pleading with the synod fathers so that new evangelism is not only about new methods, new audacity, new focus. It's also about a new leadership style.
What do you mean by that exactly?
We mean that it's important, if we are not to lose the fruit that the Spirit is already giving to the church, as we see this happening with many, many, many baptized adult people, the big majority of them leaving the church after the few years. If we are not to lose this fruit, we need pastors, parish priests, bishops who are far stronger in building vivid, extrovert, lavishly generous communities. Which, well, depends now. We can't make generalities, but certainly in Europe, these have vanished.
Why do you think this is? Why are they lacking? Why is this kind of leadership no longer around?
I think maybe because the tendency of our church has been to train more and more teachers than pastors. So we're begging to get more pastors, you know, pastors according to the heart of God, as one of the texts of Pope John Paul was saying. And for this, they need more training on how to get a vision from God, how to communicate it, articulate it for a community, how to get people around you when you're a bishop, priest, your first circle of people, to grow in competence and faith, how to lead a team and really focus them with the right energies on the right tasks and prioritizing, how to make use, and this only is a huge topic, how to make the best use of spiritual gifts, which we know in faith that the Spirit is giving to every baptized man or woman, and which in our church, in the Catholic Church, is almost not used. See, all these topics, we feel that we have a huge amount of energy, which is just here, like a gold mine under our feet. And our hope is really to have the synod opening up this gold mine and giving it out to the whole church.
This is quite an audacious request, isn't it, that you're making of the leaders of the church?
Well, I think we all, when we discuss with priests and with bishops, we all realize that, especially in our country, in France, we are very much looking at how to keep the church as we know it working. And it can require heroic maintenance. But we can't go on like that. Some of our parish priests have 32, 35 parishes that have become one. It's impossible or superhuman to be doing it like that. So we are confronted to our weaknesses now, and we all realize, lay people and priests alike, that we need to put the priority back to people who are not in the church, to go to them and to use the gifts and the talents of lay people so that they can become the agents of God where they live. And it's not that audacious. I think we come to realize we need to change the way we do things if we want the church to grow. But it requires a pastoral vision. But many people are on that line. It's not that bold.
So pastoral leadership, new vision is one of the things that you're asking for on the second?
Well, this place is a place where people speak and think, and that's the place, and pray. Now, new evangelization is about also doing things, right? That's why, you know, the first, very first new evangelization was back in the first century and is written carefully in the Acts of the Apostles. And this book is called Acts. It's not called Thinking or Synod, it's called Acts. So I think that the next step, and that I think the laity is waiting for it, is really to find some kind of a call to action, a call to mission, that would really be taking the whole church behind the Holy Father. Maybe a dream we have is to have, you know, the later Armenian bishops back in Aparecida 5 years ago made a call for Mission Continental. Maybe we should be calling for Mission Mundial. That'd be a nice way to pass on, you know, the energy, passion, generosity, which is so palatable in the synod, giving it out to the Catholic laity, to the world.
My thanks there to Florence and Mark de Leyritz, auditors at the Synod of Bishops on New Evangelization. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. But just before we go, some news that all our dedicated listeners should be aware of. As of next week, our weekday feature programme will no longer be available on these frequencies in this half-hour format. Our weekend service will remain unchanged, and you can find all our news and interviews on our website. That's simply rv.va and click on the English World icon. Please do get in touch to let us know what you think of these changes and how we can continue to provide the best service for all our listeners. We look forward to hearing from you on our email address, that's english@vatiradio.va, or our postal address, that's Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia No. 3, 00120, Vatican City. You've been listening to Vatican Radio's English feature programme. Laudato Jesus Christus.